But William Wallace's story to me resonated with everything I ever believed was true and everything I experienced as true after getting on the trail of the story. It was a walk of following what struck me with awe and in some ways with fear and trembling.
Welcome to Simply Scottish. I'm your host, Andrew McDermott. Today, my voice is a wee bit hoarse from being under the weather the last few weeks, but it's okay, because I've got a gift for you already wrapped up and ready for you to enjoy. First, a bit of context. In 1995, a movie came out that changed my life. I was a young 16-year-old immigrant from Scotland, trying to navigate life in my adopted land and at the same time figure out what I had left behind. Then I went to the theatre in the summer of 95 and watched the story of William Wallace and Scotland's fight for independence come to life before my eyes. A fire ignited in me that year that continues to burn brightly today. It's the reason I started Simply Scottish in the first place. Well, can you guess what movie I'm talking about yet? That's right, Braveheart. You've heard the saying, dancing in the streets. Well, I literally was dancing in the streets of South Texas when Braveheart won Best Picture of the Year, along with other Academy Awards, at the Oscars. I was filled with patriotic fervor, and that passion has fueled my efforts to promote Scotland ever since. So, I was very excited to get the chance recently to sit down with Mr. Braveheart himself, the man who wrote the story of William Wallace as a movie, Mr. Randall Wallace. In a conversation that lasted about an hour, we talked about his experience of bringing Braveheart to life, his successful career as a Hollywood movie director and screenwriter, and we unpack some of the lessons from his memoir, Living the Braveheart Life, including the importance of teachers, mentors, and fathers, and how to be a warrior, and how to live in freedom. You're not going to want to miss any of my conversation with Randall. I'm releasing the full interview over two episodes of the podcast. I'm also going to make the video of our interview available as well, so look for that on YouTube and at simplyscottish.com. In a few minutes, part one of my interview with Randall Wallace. First, let's set the stage with some music, as is our custom. One of the relationships portrayed in the movie Braveheart is William Wallace's wife, Murren, or Murren. According to an epic poem about Wallace by Harry the Minstrel in the 15th century, one of the reasons Wallace begins his campaign to fight back against English tyranny was his love for Marian Braidfoot and his grief after she was killed. Unfortunately, no factual evidence survives to substantiate this part of Wallace's life. Some historians even go as far as saying Marian is a fabrication. Whatever the truth might be, one of Wallace's first confirmed acts of rebellion was killing the English Sheriff of Lanark, Sir William Heselrig, in 1297. This act suggests a deeply personal reason for Wallace taking up arms against the English aggressors. Was it the loss of his wife or family members? Or was it his love for Scotland and a desire to defend the freedom of his fellow Scots? While we ponder that, let's listen to a stirring song from Elaine Meyer. From her album Promised Land, this is Thigpen's Wedding.
Here I set my face unto you, here I speak my heart's true vow, here I choose to walk beside you, loving only you, my heart speaks true forevermore from now. I will love you in the dawning and in the bright noonday. I will love you in the even. Every day I live, my heart I'll give. I love you from my grave. I have heard God in your laughter. I have seen him on your laughter, for he wrote your name on my heart in flame. It's a wound I'll not erase. We will mount the wings of morning. We will fly before the wind. We will dwell within the mystery of the glories of Jehovah's love, a circle with no end. We will pitch our tents towards Zion in the shadow of his love. We will covenant between us. We will covenant with the earth below and with heaven up above. We will covenant with the dust below and the spirit up above.
I'm delighted to welcome to the show Mr. Randall Wallace, writer of the 1995 blockbuster movie Braveheart. His work in screenwriting and directing is also behind the critically acclaimed box office hits We Were Soldiers, Pearl Harbor, Secretariat, and Heaven is for Real. His films have earned more than $1 billion at the box office. He was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay for Braveheart, and he's also the New York Times bestselling author of 7 novels and a memoir called Living the Braveheart Life. Randall, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's great to be with you, Andrew, and I love your whole idea. You're simply Scottish. It's great to get to visit with you in this way.
Yes, thank you so much. Well, I want to begin, if we can, at the outset of your career, the story of how you came to write Braveheart and see it come to life as a movie. And I'm sure you've heard this a million times, but Braveheart had a huge impact on me as a young Scotsman. I believe I was 16 years old when the movie came out in 1995. And here I was just trying to figure out how to be a Scottish immigrant, you know, learning the ropes, being an American, and also trying to hold on to what I had left behind and figure out what it was I'd left behind. And then all of a sudden I go to the movies in the summer of 95 and I watch the story of Sir William Wallace come to life. And I, you know, tears streaming down my face. I mean, I was working at the movie theater at the time. So when the movie came out, I got to dress up like Wallace and put paint on my face and just really go at it and have fun with the folks that came to see it. And it was an amazing experience. And it really ignited a fire in me that still burns brightly. And it's the reason I do Simply Scottish. It just gave me an amazing opportunity to become Scottish and realize what that really meant. So before we go any further, I just wanted to thank you for your efforts in bringing this story to life.
Well, Andrew, that's a divine story. That's incredible. And I, if you've got pictures of yourself, and surely there are some of you, then I would love to see them. So please send them on. One of the things that really rattles around in my head about what you just said is that Braveheart helped in your journey to discover your identity. And it has been that for me as well. And I've described it several times, so I hope I'm not being redundant here, but I was newly married and I wanted to have children, and my wife and I got pregnant, and she knew her ancestry and I didn't know mine. And we had taken a trip to the UK and I had heard there were Wallaces in Scotland. So we went up for a look around, and it was in Edinburgh at the Edinburgh Castle that we walked into the entrance, and suddenly I saw a statue of William Wallace. And that led me on this journey because I didn't know who he was. I asked a member of the Black Watch Guard standing there, "Who is this William Wallace?" And he said, "Our greatest hero." And it took my breath away, really, to think that I'm an American keenly interested in history, and here's the greatest hero of Scotland, whose last name I share, and I've never heard of him. And that, of course, intrigued me, but it wasn't just the mystery of it being a mystery, but it was what that story was profound beyond measure to me. I know I'm going to be kind of confusing here, but when people would ask me if I'd done a lot of research, I'd say, well, yeah, I read the New Testament. And that doesn't make any sense to, you know, a lot of people, and particularly if you didn't grow up as I did in the Christian faith. But William Wallace's story to me resonated with everything I ever believed was true and everything I experienced as true after getting on the trail of the story. It was a walk of following what struck me with awe and in some ways with fear and trembling. There are theologians who will say the beginning of a relationship with God is the fear of God. Well, this story scared me, Andrew, because it was so huge and so meaningful to me. And I didn't have a sense that it was going to be meaningful to the whole world. I didn't even ask the question. It was like, it was so meaningful to me, I had to follow it. And when it turned into something that people all over the world could see truth in and could relate to in their own way, it became a guidepost for me about believing and stepping out in faith.
So you got to reinvigorate Wallace's story. You got to tell his story because you recognized key aspects of his life in your life. And in doing so, you just get to transfer his experience and relay it for a whole new set of generations. That's a special thing. You know, not much is known about Wallace's early life. I mean, we have Blind Harry's 15th century poem about Wallace, although, you know, aspects of that are hotly debated still. Did it seem to help you that there wasn't too much out there about him? Was that limiting or was that freeing as you channeled his story?
I think it was freeing, Andrew, and freeing not in the obvious sense of there were no or very, very few accepted historical facts to act as a fence on my imagination or on my, I want to say vision more than imagination, because it truly felt that William Wallace and his story were telling themselves to me. I even had a dream during the pre-production phase of Braveheart. I was there working with Mel in a hotel, and I had a dream so vivid, I thought it was real. When I awoke, I wasn't sure it hadn't happened. In my dream, I was asleep, and there was a knock on the door, and I opened it, and William Wallace was standing there. Hmm. And he had come to talk to me about what we were doing. And, you know, you can make of that as you will, but I felt that I was unrestrained by scholars' collections of facts, but that if I really looked at the story, then what I would choose to tell would be consistent with the truth, if not consistent with literal facts, as in, when you're making a movie, you're trying to tell the story in 2 hours, and in every art form, you're taking a slice of something and saying, in this, what I'm aspiring to is to say, in this slice is the whole truth in some way. It's like a favorite picture of a loved one, and you say, in that look, I see everything about them. And that was the way it was with William Wallace. When I started to write the story, Andrew, I didn't expect what represents the first act of the movie, or most of the first act of in a three-act structure of Braveheart. His whole childhood, I had not imagined at first would be in the movie, but I started to write it as a kind of warm-up for the story. But then it just started coming out, and it came out the way it did. And then I discovered the Blind Harry and was reading Blind Harry, things which in Blind Harry are not mentioned in any of the history books, but they were in my screenplay before I had read Blind Harry. And that really scared me. I mean, that shook me up. That got my attention. Like, how did he imagine or see a certain situation that I also imagined and saw? Even if we, you know, see Blind Harry as a kind of screenwriter of the 1500s who went around pretending to be blind when he wasn't. I none of that's relevant to me. What's relevant is in that story, you go, whoa. And in writing Braveheart, I kept going, whoa. Things would happen that I didn't see coming, that I had never imagined. And that's when, as a screenwriter, you know the story's coming alive, is when characters are saying things that make you weep, that make you laugh, that surprise you, that you never imagined before. Then the story is alive.
And it sounds kind of funny, you know, to say, well, I didn't have a lot of facts, and but it makes total sense that you would that you would have the ability to get to the pure aspects of the man William Wallace and not be distracted by all the facts and all the things he did and all the places he went, but just really get to the heart of the man. And I think you accomplished that with Braveheart. Well, in the novel version of the Braveheart story, you write, "It is the tales we tell ourselves that make us who we are." You come from a family of storytellers, as you explain in your book, and you wrote your first story of brave man and battles set in Tennessee in your grandmother's country store. So yes. How did you learn to write? And was it just hearing stories that made you want to write? Or did you get writing in college?
It was hearing stories that made me want to write, and finding that I felt so involved and so near the truth, I think is the way I'd put it, when I would hear my father or mother or grandmother or my elders tell stories, or even hear stories in school. And the stories captured me with such power. And it wasn't, I hasten to say, not just in what we think of as traditional narrative, but stories like listening to Ode to Joy and listening to great hymns sung in church with the organ thundering. That the feeling that I got then was like the feeling I got listening to stories. It was all something of transcendence and power. And then I just found that I enjoyed telling stories. And when I was writing them, I felt peculiarly alive. So when I got to school and started to study writing formally, I had the experience, which I suppose is good for any student, of saying, what I have learned in studying formally is that this is not something that you can formally learn. It's studying other people's writing as a student can inform you of certain things, but it doesn't tell you how to get out and do it. That's another level of things.
And you had quite a bit of practice telling stories. You've written songs. You early in your career worked in television. You had a lot of practice telling those stories, and you also got those stories from your father and your mother and just people around you in your family and your community. Yes. So it sounds like you absorbed a lot of stories, and that gave you the ability to tell them well. Well, after Braveheart, and we'll come back to Braveheart when I talk about this awesome book, but after that movie, you went on to write and or direct several box office hits. You got to work with Mel Gibson again in 2002's We Were Soldiers. That's the story of the first major battle of the American phase of the Vietnam War. And at one point, Lieutenant Colonel Hal Moore is asked, "What do you think about being a soldier and a father?" And his response, I think, was pretty cool. You know, well, he would hope that doing well at one would make him good at the other. Can you speak to that? I know you fathers and warriors figure a lot into your storytelling. Why is it important to show these aspects of life on the big screen?
I think that I don't know of any other relationship in life that's as important as fathers and sons. It's not to say they're more important than mothers and daughters or fathers and mothers, but the father-son relationship is sacred and profound and the greatest adventure I could ever imagine. And I hadn't even imagined it when I realized I wanted to be a father. I just realized I wanted to be a father. I didn't know how great a journey it would be when I took the first steps, but I think we pass on our greatest loves and our deepest values in that relationship. It's fascinating to me, Andrew, that you quote that line from We Were Soldiers. I watched We Were Soldiers again for the first time in maybe 20 years, just a few nights ago. Some of my friends from Pepperdine, I live in Malibu, and Pepperdine University is there, and it's a great university. And these young men who are leaders there, young leaders of that university, asked me to come to watch We Were Soldiers with them. And that line resonated so powerfully with me because I will find that there are times when my work will take me away from my family. And that's intensely painful and it's dangerous. I know people in my profession and of course in many others, but you'll see an enormously successful father and his sons will be deeply troubled. And not that we can avoid being troubled in life, but one of the things that I would tell myself is that in leaving the family in order to come back, but to leave the family to provide, to show them life, to demonstrate in your best terms what it is to be a man, is one of the best things you can possibly do for your family. And it's a critical thing. It's a necessary thing. And if it requires being away sometimes, whether that's physically away or mentally and emotionally away at times, it's what is required. And it shows them this is what a man does. And I think it's certainly vivid when that man is a soldier. In that same scene, Hal Moore's daughter asks him what war is. And he tells her, struggling to be as honest as he can with a child, that war involves people in some country wanting to kill others, and men like her father would go there to stop them. And she says, are they going to try to take your life? And he has to tell her, yes, they are going to try. And I don't know any, you know, he makes her a promise that he's going to come back. And it's hard for me to imagine moments that require words with more substance than those would require. And that situation requires, which I think to me brings it full circle to a story like Braveheart. For me, was a story that asked me to affirm what my deepest hopes are and my deepest beliefs are. And it moves me, and I take note of the fact that it seems to help other people who are viewing it to have that same experience.
Yeah, it's such a humbling job, being a father. I can speak from experience. You know, I have three young daughters at home and a stepson, and it's just one of the hardest things we'll do, and yet so rewarding. But I appreciate what you are bringing out there, that, you know, if you're going away, do it with responsibility, or be responsible in that, because without your presence, you can't teach those valuable lessons and you can't impart that love that your family desperately needs. So that's a really good lesson there. Well, in 2010, you directed Secretariat, based on William Knack's 1975 book about the thoroughbred racehorse that went on to win the Triple Crown. What was, I know you've worked, you've done some movies where you've written the story and directed it, so you get that special responsibility of telling your own story and shaping it. But in some movies, you've worked with other people's stories. What's the difference? What was it like working with other people's material? Was that harder, easier?
Well, it's great when you do, as I got to in Secretariat and again in Heaven is for Real. And also say with We Were Soldiers, I had an incredibly great book to work off of. You're working with great stories and you have to internalize them. I mean, it's a cliched metaphor, but I think it makes sense that you're wearing different hats, the hat of the writer, the hat of the director, but maybe a better metaphor is that you're actually two different people. It's like it's different sides of yourself. And the director has got to internalize every bit of a story. So it's as if the director is writing it himself. Even if I wrote every word of the screenplay and the original story, and you know that it's totally mine, as it has been in a few cases, like Man in the Iron Mask. And even though Man in the Iron Mask was based on an Alexandre Dumas story, but when I've written a story, I'm still, when I'm directing, trying to understand the writer. And trying to understand how to take that story and make it alive so that it can be filmed. So in many ways, it's the same experience.
Just different parts of yourself or internalizing a part of someone else.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And you've done a tremendous job bringing other people's stories to life as well as your own. Well, I think it's rather hilarious that before your Hollywood film career, you were put in charge of animals at Opryland in Nashville, and you mention in some of your writing that experience helped inform you as a film director. Can you speak to that funny episode in your life?
Yeah. So I was at Duke University. I had gotten my undergraduate degree, which is what you call college, right, around the world. And I had done an additional year of graduate school in the Divinity School. But I had not, I really wanted to explore my writing more than, say, a professional call into the Christian ministry. But I had seen an opportunity in Nashville, auditions that they were having for this place called Opryland. And I went and auditioned with an original song that I had written. The song was called Me and the D.O.G. And it was about a man who, is stuck in a bad relationship and has to kowtow to his wife's dog. And that's how bad his marriage is. So they found that funny when they were, and I meant it to be funny, when I auditioned with that song, and they offered me a job, a permanent job, as manager of animal shows at this theme park. And in the animal shows, there were barnyard animals trained to play musical instruments. We had a pig named Pigarachi, and it was really corny, but it was also a fabulous experience. It was great fun. The audiences loved it. We had 6,000 to 8,000 people every day come through and watch that show. And I was 22 years old, responsible for the whole operation of a show that included trained barnyard animals and actors who were trained to work with these animals, and the combination of music and visuals. And I was getting really incredible experience about directing, particularly in the management of people. I did that for 2.5 years, and it was great fun. And I also was able to explore full-time writing then, and I learned a great deal. And most of that writing was songwriting. And I was training myself to write dialogue for movies without ever knowing that that's what I was doing. I was just trying to write songs. But song lyrics have to be lyrical and economical, and you're limited maybe 12 to 16 lines in a song. And when I started writing screenplays, writing dialogue was completely natural to me, largely from that experience.
Well, I think it's wonderful that we can look back, and see what God has done, and just the funny stories at the beginning, and just the hilarious ways that, that God has worked in our lives. And it's just a funny chapter in your life. Makes me think of Sean Connery and how he got his start. His first film, or one of his early films, was Darby O'Gill and the Little People. It was about leprechauns. It was just a funny Irish musical, you know. And guess who was watching that? The producer of the Bond films, you know, Barbara Broccoli. And if he hadn't done that, if he hadn't have, you know, taken that role, then he may never have become Bond. So it's awesome, you know. And that's in keeping with God's story, isn't it? God's economy, you know. He uses broken people. He uses people that haven't a clue what they're doing. And he can bring about amazing things. And I think you testified to that in your stories.
That was the first half of my conversation with Braveheart writer Randall Wallace. Don't miss part two of the interview, where I discuss Randall's book, Living the Braveheart Life, Finding the Courage to Follow Your Heart. We also talk about how Randall defines freedom and how he draws out the theme of freedom in Braveheart. He also discusses some of his current projects and what he's working on next. If you'd prefer to watch my chat with Randall, I'm posting the video version on YouTube and at simplyscottish.com. So look for it there. Let's close with another song by Elaine Meyer. I am a poor wayfaring stranger, traveling through this world of woe. Sounds familiar. The song's called Poor Wayfaring Stranger. I'm Andrew McDermott. Join me again soon for more of All Things Scottish. Until then, be of good cheer, and thanks for listening.
Simply Scottish is hosted and produced by Andrew McDermott. Show content, copyright, Simply Scottish Media. All music is used with consent of copyright holders. Continue your Simply Scottish experience at simplyscottish.com. Thanks for listening.
But there's no sickness, no toil or danger in that bright land to which I go. I'm going there to see my brother. Souls redeemed, their vigil keep. I'm going there to see my mother. She said she'd meet me when I come. I'm going there, way over Jordan. I'm going to my new home. One of these mornings, and it won't be long now, all men shall rise and stand side by side.